It's 4 o'clock on a Monday. You know what that means, don't you? It's time for another exciting episode of Texan TV Live. Yeah, baby. Back in the saddle again. Hello, everybody. How are you? Today, we are going to do an episode of Ask Taxi Anything. Ask Michael Anything. Yeah, just ask us anything. I like doing these every now and then because sometimes people forget stuff that they learned a long time ago. And let's see. Let's make sure I'm broadcasting. I'm not seeing anybody going, hey, Michael, how are you? Yeah, there I am. Okay. Okay, good. I am seeing some people saying hello, Michael. I was worried that I wasn't broadcasting. Anyway, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for asking. Ooh, I have a frog in my throat named after Martin Frog. Anyway, I want to start out today with a whole bunch of questions from Catherine Werlinich. She sent in a book of questions, but they're all pretty darn good. Sorry. And then I will cover some other ones that are on the sheet, and then we will cover anything that comes in through the chat room. So are you guys ready? Here we go. This is in a subsection that Catherine sent in called The Screeners. I understand why your team needs to be anonymous, but I'm curious about them. Have you ever considered offering insight into who will be listening to a track when you post the listing? The reason I ask is there are songs I've sent in and the same screener has heard them 4+ times. One screener might always reject it and yet another screener will put it through. I get this is largely related to the fit for the listing. That's absolutely true. But sometimes they just don't like the song while another screener does. I don't think that's a fair statement because it's not like they said, I just don't like the song or told you that. You're assuming that. If I knew who'd be screening, it'd help me know if somebody's going to, if it's someone my song probably will/will not jive with. Okay, so first of all, it would be virtually impossible to do that. And the reason is that depending on the listing, we don't know how many submissions we're going to get. So for a genre that's a tiny little genre, let's say gospel, we don't get very many gospel listings and we may only have one screener that's qualified to do gospel. Because as you know, we don't put screeners on listings unless they're hyper-qualified in that particular genre. Something as kind of broad and general as singer-songwriter, we might have 2, 3, or 4 different screeners on that, depending on how many submissions came in. Generally speaking, for singer-songwriter, we're going to get more than we would get, obviously, for gospel, because it's nichier. So in the case of gospel, you're probably going to get the same screener all the time, but that person is super well-qualified. The screeners actually don't forward stuff based on their personal preference. That would not be cool. That would get them fired. It's all about, does it fit what the listing asked for? Believe me, back when I used to screen in the early days of Taxi, I heard stuff all the time that I personally didn't like, but it was really good as a response to what the listing asked for. There were plenty of times where I heard stuff that I absolutely loved and I so badly wanted to forward it, but I couldn't because it didn't match what the listing asked for. So, yeah, the personal preference thing just doesn't come into play. All industry professionals would tell you that. Music supervisors don't pick music because they like it and they want to listen to it at home or in the car or wherever they listen. They pick it because it works with the scene. Music libraries pick music because they think they have clients that could use that music. They may hear something they love, but if they know that it's been, you know, 10 years since a client asked for that particular thing, they're not going to go to the trouble of signing it and putting it in their catalog. Let's see, how do they, this is also from Catherine, how do they listen to music? Is it all in one sitting? Are they alone or with the client? They're definitely not with the client. Could you imagine us trying to coordinate? Okay, screener who lives in, Thousand Oaks, California, and the client is in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We're going to fly that screener out to Philly, or we're going to put you guys on Zoom together. No, they're not sitting with the client. That does not happen. If they were sitting with the client, then the client might as well screen it, meaning they've got a lot of time in their hands, which they don't. Is it all in one sitting? It depends. Some of our screeners, they never work more than 4 hours at a given on a given day. We designed the 4 hour rule at the very beginning of the company because you get burnt out after 4 hours, even listening to music. Because you're sitting there trying to determine, does it fit with the listing asked for, and is it over the quality bar? Well, that strains your brain a little more than just listening to music as a fan. But heck, even listening to music as a fan, 4 hours might get a little tedious. Some screeners might work for an hour or two because they all work remotely now. For the vast majority of the time that Taxi's been in business, they actually worked here. We had a room with 14 fairly large cubicles. And they would sit in there and listen, and they had a shift that went from 9:30 in the morning until 1:30 in the afternoon, and then another shift for 4 hours in the afternoon. So yeah, and now that they all work remotely, frankly, unless we're up against some sort of deadline or there's an urgent situation, as long as they're meeting our deadlines and we're able to get their work done in time for us to get the music off to our clients in a prompt manner, we don't really care if they work for an hour in the morning and then another hour and a half, around lunchtime, and then another hour and a half later in the day. It doesn't matter to us. Some screeners prefer to do it all in one shot just to get it done and know that they've got it done and not hanging over their head. Other screeners prefer to fit it in between other stuff. Remember, it's not a full-time job for the screeners. Many of them are session musicians, for instance. We've had music supervisors that have worked between gigs as screeners. We've had people who own music libraries, not many of those, but some that own music libraries that have actually screened under the roof here. One lady worked here for a year. She was the former senior VP of music publishing at Sony ATV. And she had other big consulting jobs as a publisher, but would still work at Taxi all the time. I always asked her why. I mean, you've been a really big deal in the industry. And she said, because it keeps me connected to the music and I actually learn a lot. By giving feedback, it helps me to better articulate my thoughts when I'm meeting with the writers and trying to give them direction. So I thought that was a cool answer. I don't know if they all listen through headphones or they all listen through speakers because they're all working from home studios now. But I would venture to say that probably 70% work on headphones. Just a guess. Some may work on speakers, some have home studios. Maybe they're listening in their studio because they know their monitors well. Impossible for me to know. When they all worked under the roof here at Taxi, they all worked on headphones. And we had a pretty big stash of decent headphones, not like audiophile headphones that sounded too pretty, but gosh, I'm Audio-Technica headphones. It sounded pretty darn good, and they could either bring their own or use the ones that we had here. I've assumed, maybe wrongly so, that each screener number represents just one person. For example, 419 is always this person, but I'm wondering, are there different people who listen under the same number? No. There have never been two screeners with the same number in the 32-year history of the company. If there's a problem, if there's any sort of problem, and we have to go back in the database for any historical look to unravel the problem, we need to know that number 419 was always number 419. So there you go on that. Wow, must be somebody's birthday. Or no, somebody got a good placement. Anyway, okay, taxi clients, the next subhead from Catherine. How do you build relationships with your clients? That's a great question. I would say, and again, I'm just guessing, shooting from the hip on this number, but I would say probably half of them reach out to us. They hear about taxi through other friends in the industry, and they reach out. Other clients are people. Here's a great example. If we notice that we haven't been getting very many listings in country, and our members are like, yo, taxi, where are the country listings? We will reach out first to old clients of ours that haven't run a listing in a while that routinely looked for country music. Or maybe we'll reach out to friends of ours in Nashville and say, is there anybody who's well-connected, currently working on the row, that might be able to use the service that taxi provides? So we go out and we go fishing for new clients, and we reach out to them probably with an email. Oftentimes now we'll set up a Zoom with them. We find that the relationships start out better and maybe go a little deeper and stay stronger if we have face-to-face contact via Zoom. Yeah, you know what? Maybe even 70% of our clients reach out to us now. On the independent film side, that's an area where we routinely go fishing for new clients. And typically, an indie filmmaker might only produce one film every few years. It's not like they finish one up in July and they start another one in August and it's done in October. Their cycle is much, much, much longer than that. So we look for people that are not necessarily making Hollywood blockbusters, because those generally license music. The majority of what they license are from big artists on big labels signed to big publishers for big dollars. Obviously, some library music makes it in as well, but it's usually background source. Somebody walks into a diner and there's music playing in the speakers above their head. So that may come from a library, but they're not going to reach out to a company like Taxi. Do you have anybody that's got, you know, ambient diner music? That I mean, they could, but they generally don't. But the independent filmmakers have a misguided belief that if they don't use a royalty-free library, that they themselves will have to write the royalty checks every quarter. I don't know where they got that belief. But I've spoken to many independent filmmakers over the last 3 or 4 years. They all think that. They all think that they have to use royalty-free libraries. The ones who eventually use Taxi to find music for their films are thrilled at the results they get. I would say one of the earlier situations like that, well, 4, 5, 6 years ago, we had somebody that ran listings for their independent film, and I think that they had 9 different pieces of music they were looking for in the film, and something like 7 or 8 of those slots got filled by Taxi members. And now that person routinely refers other indie filmmakers to us because their experience was so good. So yay Taxi members for having great music and the right music. What's the makeup of your client demographic? 65% licensing catalogs, etc. It varies, but I would say it's probably 3/4 film and TV, and 20-25% on the record side of the biz. It used to be 99% of it was the record side of the biz, and then it all changed. And somewhere around 1994, I got a call from a lady named Susan, who was the owner of a music library, and she asked if I could find horrific music for her. Elisa's ADATs, or what people had back then, they didn't have Pro Tools, they didn't have Logic. They had Elisa's ADATs, maybe 1, maybe 2, maybe 3, probably going through a Mackie 8-bus console or something. And because the advent of home gear, home gear got better and the prices dropped, so more people could take what was in their heart or in their mind and get it on tape, as it were. And that lady, Susan, was the first person I'm aware of that ever reached out to an entity, any entity that I'm aware of, other than maybe a next door neighbor or relative or something, and said, can you find me this kind of music? And that was truly the shot heard around the world, because that was the beginning of the revolution of independent musicians getting their music into production music libraries. Prior to that, libraries would work with established composers that were library-specific composers in many cases, not all, but many. And they would say, okay, I'm looking for this genre, that genre, another genre, and they would give them a list of genres, maybe give them some examples. And remember, we didn't have the internet. They couldn't send a link to YouTube back then for a reference. They probably sent out cassettes or maybe burned CDs. And those professional composers would make demos of their ideas. The library would pick the ones they liked best. The composers would submit charts. The library would hire a big famous studio, like where big hit records were made. They would block book it for a couple of weeks or a month. They would go in and they would cut all the rhythm tracks for a few days. And they would go in and do all the string overdubs and all the horn overdubs, et cetera, et cetera. Everything changed literally the day that that lady, Susan, picked up the phone. She sounded just like Joey's agent. You've heard me tell this story a zillion times. But remember Joey's agent on Friends, Estelle? Sound like a chain-smoking New York woman in her 60s. That's what this lady sounded like, and we are still friends to this day. But she, in my opinion, single-handedly changed the course of the industry. Probably would have happened without her, without me, because of the technological revolution with home studio gear. But prior to that, I was completely unaware. Most musicians had no idea what a music library was. Let's just put it that way. Okay, next question. I exclusively contracted 14 songs with two different TV and film catalogs via Thank You Taxi, she says. I signed the contracts 5 months ago and 3 months ago, respectively, and although I see the songs registered with ASCAP, I am not seeing the songs in their catalogs yet. How long does it take before licensing companies add your music to their catalogs? It varies. One of the things that I know that might hold it up is maybe they're going to do a full album release where they need 10, 15 songs on a collection of a specific genre. So they've got, let's say they're going to put 12 and they've got 9 and they're still searching for the other 3. So they're not going to release that compilation, that album, until they've got everything. So you may have signed your contract with them 3 months ago, but it's not going to show up in their website till they release the album. That's just one of many examples of things that could hold it up. By the way, in our newsletter, the Taxi Transmitter, we're currently publishing the transcript of the panel that we did at the Road Rally with music library owners, with a music supervisor, and a couple of members, Vince Nicotina and Matt Vanderbo. And the title of that panel, if you had been there and if you went to the panel, you would know this, was called Why Does It Feel Like My Music Has Gone Into a Black Hole? And we spent an hour and a half, maybe even 2 hours covering this subject. All the different reasons why you get forwarded by taxi, don't hear anything after you've been forwarded for quite some time, or you get signed by a library and it doesn't show up in their catalog for months, or maybe the library told you that you're a finalist on a TV commercial, it's down to the last 2 or 3 people, and you're sitting there just waiting for a text or a phone call, you don't hear anything for days, maybe even weeks. There's so many things that can happen. Read the newsletter. Part one of that is currently on the website at taxi.com. Click the tab that says news. Part two will be coming out in a few days. And there are going to be many parts of that. It's a really long transcript. So we're publishing about 3,000 words at a time. I was actually working on the newsletter pretty much all weekend. And I've got to tell you, there is so much gold in that transcript. So make sure you read it. And along the same vein, Catherine says, it was 6 months after a couple of my songs were forwarded that I was finally contacted by a licensing company. Told you, you know, they run a listing and maybe it was an urgent thing that was a priority for them the day they ran the listing. Then circumstances changed. Maybe they lost a client. Maybe they already found something for that slot in a show. There are a multitude of things that could happen. But all of a sudden, that thing that was urgent yesterday, not so urgent today. But they're not going to throw that music out, as you'll see if you read the transcript of that panel. Virtually every single person in the industry keeps files of stuff on their desktop, of their computer, and they hear stuff that they think is great. They put it in that file for a rainy day. Or maybe they're working on a compilation, but they've got a release date for that compilation slotted for October of 2024. So they've run the listing now and they're building up a pile. And they've got a file folder full of, this is stuff that I like that I'm going to make an offer on, try and do a deal with, but today's not the day, or this month isn't the month. It's something that just doesn't have to be done right now. So there are many variables that can affect that, and I'm sorry, but that's the way the industry works. Please read that transcript in the taxi newsletter. Beyond the submissions your clients receive from taxi, how vast is the competition? I get this is hard to quantify, but any perspective is appreciated. So I'm not really clear on where the competition is. Catherine, are you here? KP, save your question for when I'm done with these guys that got mailed in, okay? And good to see you. Anyway, there's no competition at taxi. It doesn't matter if there were 16 submissions or 116 submissions or 384 submissions, because the screeners aren't listening on Monday to part of the batch, and then Tuesday another part of the batch, and Wednesday another part of the batch, and Wednesday they go, oh, this is better than the thing I heard on Monday morning at 10 a.m. I think that was submission number 74. Let me go back and see if I can find that and compare the two. None of that ever happens. It's all, is this on target for what the company has asked for, and is it good enough? And if it meets those two criteria, it goes in the forward bucket. So there's no competition here. Now, as far as the competition, let's say the music library, frankly, I don't know where libraries source other new music for their catalogs other than taxi. Clearly they must, or they certainly did in the past before taxi existed, although we've been around for 32 years now. I would imagine that they source some of that new music from composers or artists that they already have in their catalog, that refer people to them maybe, but the point is they're probably not ingesting music for consideration for their catalog from a lot of sources and have big piles. It's down to whatever taxi forwards them is probably, in many, if not most of the cases, the primary place where they're going to pick the stuff that goes in their catalog. And again, it's not competition. I don't think most libraries, there could be exceptions, but I don't think most libraries are looking for, I need four of these, and taxi has forwarded them 17, so they've got to eliminate 13. No, they're going to take everything that they think has a potential use by their client base, the types of things that they license, and they're going to try to sign all that stuff in their catalog. They're not going to put in 768 piano cello tracks, probably. But if they've got 17 from taxi and they think 13 of them are viable things that their clients would eventually want, they're going to put all 13 in their catalog. So there's really not competition there either. And I think it's a fair statement to say there's not really competition anywhere as in, ooh, this is the best in the world. It's more about which one works best in the scene, which one enhances the emotion or the action. of the scene. So it's not competition based on the quality of the music, like this piece of music is better than that one. It's this piece of music is better for this, in the context of this scene, for this circumstance. So if there is any competition, that's where it is. But that's not really competition. Catherine also asks, I've heard your recent message about how you asked your clients, if we have songs that are close, would you want to hear it kind of as a second-tiered grouping? And you relayed that your clients said no, that they did. And frankly, I was kind of shocked at how loudly they said no. And it wasn't even second-tier stuff. It was stuff that was also really good that just didn't fit what they were looking for. Didn't hit the nail on the head, but it was really good. So we said, why don't we create a second list for you? So if you've got the time and the will, you can go in and listen to that stuff as well. And they were like, nope, just keep doing what you're doing. We love it the way it is. I was frankly surprised. So Catherine says, here's my ask. Would Taxi consider for songs that are deemed close by one screener that another screener is appointed for one more listen? And if that screener would have forwarded the close song, it gets forwarded. Just to let you know, because we've been around for 32 years, we tried that years ago. I think around 2002, 2004-ish. We tried a couple of different approaches. We tried having a panel of three screeners who didn't know how the voting was silent. It was blind. And funny enough, 99% of the time, the panel of three forwarded and returned the same stuff as a single screener. So it's not like, whoa, it's not a matter of taste or even expertise. These people are really hand selected. They're not trained on how to think about the value of music in a certain context, like this is for a library, which is a different approach than if we screen for a music supervisor or for screening, let's say, for a video game. There are all these different things that apply to the screening process, and the screeners know that. They know they're working within a context with certain parameters. So close. Yeah, that whole thing about us having a second list was not so much about close. It was about it's not on target for what you're looking for, but it's really friggin' good, and you might want to put it in your catalog anyway. And they just said no. So it wasn't about close. Taxi TV segments. I always enjoy watching the recordings of these. I just started reading Demystifying the Genre by Dean Krepain. Great book. I can't endorse it highly enough. And it made me think that this would be a great topic for a segment, a subgenre submerged, so to speak, where you deep dive with the author, perhaps. I've actually had Dean on Taxi TV probably three times. He's spoken at several road rallies. He's spoken at the virtual road rallies. Giving opinions that are permanently recorded and put on the internet about genres is something that scares me a little bit. And the reason is because I find library owners that I know that we work with as clients, and they'll say, can you find me this genre and give us examples? And the examples aren't really representative of the genres they asked for. So even they may misname the genre or not very clear on what the genre subgenre is. So we have to do a little fishing expedition. If we think that they're unclear to us, we have to reach back out to them and say, we're not really clear because the references sound like this, but your request is like that. So what should we do? Which one do you really want us to go for? Boy, you guys are talking about anything but the subject at hand. Dan Weber, you have to get sleep? Why? Good to see you, Dan. I'm double checking. Yeah, everybody's watching. I'm just making sure because you guys are not talking about the subjects at hand. You're talking about everything but. Okay. So yeah, if you look at what pop was considered even 5 years ago versus what it is today, pretty darn different. So I'm not so. I would love to have Dean on again. I would love to discuss many of the things that are in that book. As far as us, I mean, where do we start? Where do we stop? There's so many genres and so many subgenres. But between Dean's book and Steve Barden's book, the lists of genres and subgenres that are in there are so comprehensive that we don't need to do an ep we couldn't do an episode as effectively as they've covered it in their books. Catherine, you're in there. Hey, how are you? Okay, finally, she says this is not for the show, but just something I'm thinking about. I'm going to talk about this one on the show. You prominently feature the 2021 Road Rally on your page. It's actually on the members page. When you guys log into your account, there's a thing that says watch the 2021 Road Rally. The reason we don't do 22 or 23 is 2021 was the last completely virtual road rally we did, where everything was done on a webcam, on the internet, virtually. Now we're back to doing the road rally in the hotel. We do some prequels or sequels in front or behind the road rally, but kind of a drop in the bucket compared to what we did back in 2020 and 2021 when we were all locked down. So that's why we put 2021 up there. It's the last complete road rally, and it was actually really good. A lot of really good stuff, a lot of really good panels. So that's why we don't have 2022 or 2023. We do have the videos of the sequels and prequels, and you can find those on our YouTube page. All right, here is one from Diamond Densmore. Do the screeners remember the members that submit to listings frequently? I'd love to know that they're seeing my growth. That's a great question. And the truth of the matter is, I think that they do because over 32 years of talking to screeners, they'll say, hey, by the way, I got another great submission from XYZ person. Obviously, that happened more when they were under the roof here and we'd run into them, at the coffee machine or the water cooler or whatever. But yes, they do remember. And frankly, as I've said on many other episodes, the screeners want to see you guys succeed, maybe for their own selfish reasons, because the more members we have, the more work they get as screeners. But I think it goes much deeper than that. They are all musicians. They're all fans of music. Many of them are particularly fans of music that works in the context of media, film, TV, and commercials. And therefore, they get excited. They like being the discoverer, as it were. Back when they were all under the roof here wearing headphones, they would stand up, tear off the headphones, stand up in their cubicle and go, check this out, everybody, take off your headphones. And they would unplug theirs from the computer and play it over speakers or something so everybody in the room could hear it. So, yeah, they love to see your growth. Do they follow it, like, gee, I wonder if so-and-so is going to make a submission this week. I'm curious to see if they've gotten any better at their vocal delivery. I don't think it goes that deep, but I think when they bump into somebody that they knew a year ago that wasn't quite getting it right, and they've seen that person progress over time because of the feedback from the A&R team, I think that it's very rewarding for them. This one's from Nick Albert. We recently had a trailer-style cover song returned due to the top line vocal having more of a musical theater vibe as opposed to cutting edge cinematic flavor. It was the first trailer style production that we've done, and this was the only critique, so only criticism, I guess, or only feedback. So we were very happy. We're just curious how we can improve our vocal productions to give them more of that cinematic flair. It's really hard to say without hearing it, but just from what the screener said that you've relayed back to me, hearing something that works in the context of a live Broadway production is dramatic, over the top, a lot of projection so that it makes it from the stage out to the audience. Although they do have this new invention called a microphone that they frequently use on Broadway now. It's a whole different style. So if you want to understand what cinematic vocals sound like, the best thing you could do would be go to YouTube and Google trailers with cinematic covers and listen. Usually, a lot of the, what's the word that they use? Reimagined covers. So you take something, let's take the song American Woman by the Guess Who. Why that popped into my head, I do not know. But, you know, it's got a certain tempo. It's like a mid-up-tempo song, kind of a classic rock song. So what if you took that song and slowed it down with light, much more delicate instrumentation and made the vocals more ethereal, more heartfelt? Instead of proclaiming American Woman, you presented an image of an American woman, but not Broadway, okay? There's a difference, but the best way to learn it is just go listen. Just Google reimagined covers for trailers, reimagined cover songs for trailers, and listen to how the vocals are. Cinematic in that context, there are many times that people use cinematic to describe things, whether it's musical or filmic in nature, but cinematic as it relates to reimagined covers is generally taking something fast and making it slow and making it more ethereal. Then again, I have also heard people that take slow songs and turn them into like Blink 182 punky poppy stuff. So it can go either way. Just go listen. It's all out there, easy to find, and best way to learn. All right, this one's from Patrick Flynn. I've experienced an inordinate number of submissions. I love the word inordinate. Thank you for using that. Routed to the same screener so much that it's hard for me to believe your claim that the system is totally random for assignments. It's not a claim. It's a fact. But it is totally random. But if I knew a little bit more about the genre you were submitting, I could better answer this question. Like I said before, if you're submitting for a niche genre that we may only have one qualified screener for because we don't have enough work for a second or third or fourth screener, and this person happens to be head and shoulders better than other ones that we've tried, that's the person that we're going to have as a go-to. So we have some people, country, we probably, so educated guess, probably right now, we probably have 5 or 6 different country screeners. Several of them are actually publishers in Nashville. And sometimes they actually screen their own stuff or have somebody that we've trained and approved of under their roof screen the stuff. So if you're submitting country, you've got a pool of 4 or 5 people. If you're submitting instrumental music for film and TV, we have many more screeners that do that. So there's going to be more of a variety. If you're screening heavy metal, we probably have 2 people that are super well qualified at doing that. So I'll bet you anything, if we were on the phone right now or on a Zoom call having this discussion, that I would find out from you, Patrick, that the vast majority of what you're submitting is the same genre and probably somewhat of a niche genre, in niche compared to other genres at Taxi. From Peter DeZadis. On requests asking for instrumentals, can we simply remove the vocal from our mix and submit? Or do we include the melody on, say, a piano? If there is no vocal or melody where the vocal is supposed to be, the instrumental is rather blaring and meaningless, blah, blah, blah. I cover this a lot, and it's covered in our new member Zooms that we do. Apparently, you haven't seen one of those yet, but let me fill you in. I'm happy to answer it one more time. An instrumental cue is different from an instrumental. An instrumental cue is generally shorter than an instrumental. Cues are typically 90 seconds-ish, a minute-ish, no, rarely a minute-ish. 90 seconds to 2 minutes-ish, either way. And they follow a form that's almost always all A section, and the A section is kind of analogous to a chorus in a regular song, with a B section in the middle to add a little variation and give the editors that use the stuff for TV something other than just the same motif repeated over and over and over again. All that said, there is an arc. It's not here today. Sorry, I was going to pull something out to show you. There's a developmental arc. Starts out kind of skinny, builds a little bit more, drops down to that B section, probably does that for 4 or 8 bars, then comes back to the A section, and it builds and it builds and it builds to a big crescendo, and it's done. That is an instrumental cue. An instrumental, you are right, is much, much closer and probably derived from, in many cases, a song where it's got an intro and a verse and a chorus, maybe a pre-chorus, blah, 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 a bridge and an outro. So yes, you're 100% right. If there's a vocal melody, which there would be in a song, and you just mute that channel, you're going to have a rhythm track. Technically, it's an instrumental because there's no vocal and no lyric, but it's going to be boring because it's just a rhythm track. So people will then endeavor to take a lead instrument, whether it's a nylon string guitar, piano, violin, who cares, a flute, saxophone, and try and put in the entire vocal melody, and it ends up sounding like elevator music, right? So my advice is doing what I call, this is a term that I coined, not everybody in the industry may use this, but I call it melody light. Just hit some of the melody notes, like, you know, one note per measure, a couple notes per measure, just to give it a little ding, 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 rather than ding, 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 ding. Get it? That way it sounds, it doesn't sound cheesy. It doesn't sound like 101 strings doing Beatles covers. It doesn't sound like Muzak or elevator music. You will find, in most cases, the Taxi members that are most successful have moved on from taking old music of theirs and trying to repurpose it to fit a current Taxi listing. It just doesn't work out very often. And then they discover, gee, why don't I just create a new piece of music for this listing? And new members go, oh my gosh, how could they do that? You've only got 3 weeks until the deadline hits. How are you going to create a new piece of music in 3 weeks? You will fail at it at first. You'll get better at it at second, and you will become proficient at it and just downright speedy eventually. All of our successful members kind of went through that chain of events to get to the point where they can create a lot of music very quickly. And that's one of the reasons that they make good money and they're successful, is they're creating a lot of music. You can't win a lot of races unless you enter a lot of races. So all that said is you are probably better off getting over trying to repurpose old music. I know it makes sense. I even did a video many, many years ago, like probably 2008 or something, about any song you've got has a second life if you hit the mute button. But I failed to mention adding melody light back to it. But honestly, it's not the best way to go. It's a way to go, and sometimes it can work, but very often it doesn't. Can I please elaborate as to what should be submitted for requests that ask for emotional ballad instrumentals needed? I don't know exactly what you're looking for, but a general elaboration on that would be a ballad. We all know what a ballad is. Down tempo, right? Emotional, it depends how your playing is, what you're playing, what your melody is, how your hands, the feel of your hands, the emotion that you are putting into those keys and in the pedals. I'm assuming you're doing it on piano. Emotional ballad instrumentals, could you add a cello? That usually adds, depends what the emotion is too. Generally speaking, people will default to a sad emotion. They will default to something with some sort of negative connotation because that feels more emotional maybe than the uplifting stuff, but it could be uplifting. So I don't know. It's kind of a broad, vague question, but there is no absolute prescription to it. Have you ever thought about searching for emotional ballad instrumentals on YouTube and seeing which come up with or Spotify? Here's one. Need to take a sip from Andrew Riley. He says, thanks to Taxi, I now work with several libraries. Great. I hope you've told us so we can put that in our newsletter. Please don't be one of those members that has success in one form or another and just never bothers to tell us. And you're thinking, well, I just told you now. Okay. Thanks to Taxi, I now work with several libraries. Congratulations, Andrew. Some handle the final track mastering and some don't. I'm not a mastering engineer, so I mainly just slap a few good sounding plugins on my master channel. Okay. My question is for the libraries that don't handle mastering, how shall I treat the stems? Do they need to be mastered also? I barely use a DAW. I just play around with a DAW. All the years that I engineered, I did it in analog studios on pretty much SSLs or Neves. But the rules would still apply. I would think that whatever is the last thing that your music goes through as you on your mix bus, whatever's being applied on the mix bus should be applied as you're doing stems. And God forbid, do not adjust levels. This is a mistake a lot of people make. They've got a nice, healthy level on their mix bus, and now they're doing stems. Let's say they're doing just guitars, and it's primarily acoustic guitars. Not a lot of level, not a lot of dynamics, in acoustic guitars, generally speaking. So they will go, oof, there's not a lot of level. I'm going to bring those up. Well, now you've affected the mix. If the editor or music supervisor or mixer on that production goes to recombine those elements and reassemble them, but you've adjusted the levels individually, then it's not going to work. Well, the same could be said that, let's say you had everything going through an SSL mix bus compressor, which is honestly, oftentimes that's really all you need. Just a little bit of compression on the old SSL mix bus compressor really accomplishes what many mastering engineers would consider basic mastering, which is level control, eliminating peaks, as it were. So, whatever was being applied to the full mix should just be left in place and at the same levels and settings that it was for the full mix for the individual things. It could be said, and you could make an argument that, well, if there's a full mix, then it's the combination of all the dynamics of many instruments would affect that mix bus compressor differently than just stems of a few acoustic guitars. That's true. However, the minute that you now are going to remaster or individually master each thing, it's not going to sound the same when you reassemble it. So I'd rather put my bet down on just leave everything as it was, mute all other channels other than what you're trying to send out as the stem. For those of you who are, here's Pedro chiming in, put a single mastering chain on your master bus, don't need anything fancy, EQ. Out rumble, light compression. Yeah, he's basically saying exactly what I just said. So there you go. Two geniuses giving you the same information. You can't go wrong. And that's why I love doing Taxi TV. Hold on, it's that time of the day when the sun is beating on the blinds and my air conditioning has gotten ridiculously chilly. Okay. I mean, ridiculously warm, so I just set it on freeze out. This is from Dean Kremitis. Sorry if I butchered your last name, Dean. I'd like to ask Michael a question regarding metadata, more specifically genres and subgenres. I am not a world-class expert on genres and subgenres as they relate to metadata. So I just want to say that up front. What are the best or most acceptable choices for a trailer or other cinematic orchestral hybrid instrumentals that might cross between classical and electronic genres? I would just call them orchestral hybrids. And you know what? A lot of libraries, it's my personal observation, that a lot of libraries really prefer to classify the genres themselves, because I think that they find a lot of people don't make good choices on their own. They can't be objective enough about their own music, and they're overly subjective. Not about the, you know, it's great or it's not great. It's about what genre is this. And frankly, look, all humans aren't perfect at it. Library owners may not be so good. It's that person's feeling in that moment as to what they want to classify it for. Now, a library owner has background information that might help your music get picked more often, and it's information that you wouldn't have because you don't work at or own the library, but they may know that they get more searches for orchestral stuff that's called orchestral hybrids. So something that only has one tiny little synth part in it, they may classify that as a hybrid, although technically you could probably make a case that it's not, just because it's got one little synth pad or something in it. I would, in my personal opinion, I would say a hybrid is more weighted at, you know, much more electronic music in there than just a synth or a pad or a little smattering of it. So they know what their clients search for. They know what's popular with their clients, what has a higher probability of getting used. So they would use their best judgment to maybe push the envelope a little bit in a favorable way without pushing it so far that they would be considered liars or not knowing what the hell they were talking about. So a lot of library owners choose, I mean, you could add the genres and metadata. They may overrule you. Standard categorized choices I've seen don't include soundtrack or trailer, so I usually wind up going with either classical or contemporary classical modern composition, or for more electronic based pieces with some orchestral elements. It's just not always clear, and nothing seems to be the right fit. Honestly, without hearing the music, it's just really hard to say. I wish I could be more helpful, but anything would just be a guess. And without hearing the actual music, I couldn't say. But like I said, a lot of libraries prefer to do it themselves just because they have that other information that the rest of us may not have. From Doug McCafferty, is it possible to post metrics on the listing as to how many submissions and how many forwards? We have that. If you go to, Liz, can you post the link to the forwards blog? We update a thing called the forwards blog 5 days a week where we say listing number XYZ. I believe we say it had, you know, 78 submissions and 19 forwards, whatever the numbers are. And we actually post any of the music that was forwarded is posted there, assuming that the member has designated their music as available for the public to listen to. Some folks prefer to keep it private, so we can't include that. So there you go. Knowing the stats will help us better know how to invest our efforts and in what genres. I understand your logic and why you might think that, but when you get too scientific, on one hand, I'm big on strategic thinking and planning your attack, as it were. But I don't know that seeing, let's pick a genre. Let's call it dramedy just because that always pops into my head first. And let's say that you look at five dramedy listings that have run over the last 3 months and that they average 107 submissions each, and Forwards works out to be, it says, it doesn't show how many were submitted from what I just saw, but I do see what was forwarded. Okay, so I was wrong about that. Anyway, oh, I got your name right. I see Dean's in the chat room. Anyway, I don't have any advice beyond that. It just worries. I understand the strategic pitching that, but you know what? Your best thing that you can do is pitch what you're strongest at. Don't think about competition because it's not one person is better than the other or one piece of music is better than the other. It's one piece of music is more on target for what the company asked for. So it's not about the quality. The quality is a baseline that we assume. It's got to be good, but then is the other factor is does it hit the target? Have you any stories about submissions that were not forwarded by Taxi for a specific listing but went on to be successful elsewhere? And if so, any stories to tell or words of wisdom? It happens all the time. Somebody submits something that any person would listen to and go, yeah, this missed the target. Really good, but it missed the target. We can't afford it. That's why we wanted to have that. We also found this other great stuff list go out with every batch of music we send our clients. They just didn't want it. So yes, you'll hear from people that say, I submitted this, it didn't get forwarded. That's because they were off target. And then later on, they had a relationship with a library that they got through a previous taxi forward or something. And they submit it directly to that library. And the library goes, yeah, I can use one of those, sure. And they sign it. So that does happen. And I wish the libraries were bigger fans of our idea to allow us to forward them music that didn't hit the stylistic nail on the head, but was just really good. And that we know enough to know that libraries would want to sign it. However, please consider this because there are no general answers, one size fit all things in the industry. It depends who their clients are. You could have two libraries, and let's say both of them do primarily instrumental music, just for the sake of argument on this. But one of them works almost entirely with reality TV shows, whereas the other one works primarily with 60-minute, hour-long dramas. They have different types of clients with different needs that need different types of music. You'll hear dramedy all over reality TV. It's probably one of the most used genres, popular genres. But you may not hear dramedy used, and just if you're not clear on what dramedy is, it's the often pizzicato do 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 do. Somebody's sneaking around the bushes. So they both do instrumental music, but they have different clients with different needs, and one may love dramedy because they have a lot of reality shows, and the other one doesn't. So there you go. So maybe it didn't get forwarded to Library A, but Library B could use it. There are just so many variables that I wish that we could just give you guys an easy prescription. If you do this, and the stuff that we do tell you, if you do this, people don't do, and then they wonder why they're not successful. One of the big you should do's is go to the Taxi Road Rally. I see and do a touch-up edit on every one of the success stories that hits our website. I worked on them this weekend, actually. And I'm just shocked by how many people say, I met this library owner at the bar or standing in line at the road rally or sitting next to them in a class, or this person, library owner, was my mentor at the one-to-one mentor thing. You dramatically increase your odds of having success by going to the taxi road rally. I realize it often means getting on an airplane, flying cross country, walking into a hotel with a couple thousand people that you've never met before, and it sounds really intimidating, and people are going to go, oh my God, your music sucks. Doesn't happen. It's the warmest, most welcoming, inviting crowd of musicians you will find anywhere. And every member that goes there would tell you that. It takes something that's got real value, meaning your taxi membership, and amplifies or multiplies that value by a factor of 3, 4, 5, 10. I mean, it's unknowable, but I can tell you that I see success story after success story after success story where people meet industry people and end up doing deals with them that result placements. So you know what? Yeah, drop $350 on a plane ticket. Drop $1,000 on plane ticket and hotel. It'll be the best $1,000 you ever spent. For those of you who live in LA County and have no travel expense and don't come to the road rally and your taxi members, shame, 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 shame. All right, here's one from Callum Upton. Have screeners noticed any music? Oh, this is a great one. Have screeners noticed any music created using AI tools like Suno AI being submitted to taxi listings? Have screeners been issued with guidance to look out for it? I have not had one report come to me, and they have not been issued any guidance because, frankly, this is evolving so quickly that any guidance we give today would be inapplicable a week from now, probably. And also, I'm a little gun shy on that. Not that this is a great example, but here is an example that might show why I'm gun shy. Sometimes screeners will say, and you should find a better flute sample. And the members go ballistic. That wasn't a flute sample. That was actually my daughter playing flute into a microphone. Your screeners clearly don't know what the hell they're talking about. Well, the screener actually did. They assumed because it sounded less than wonderful that it was an older or not very good sample. Truth of the matter is, yeah, maybe it was your 16-year-old daughter playing flute and she's in the band at school. Maybe she's a great flautist, but you don't know how to record a flute. So you got a bad flute sound that sounded like a bad sample. So there you go. It's just... could you imagine if we say to somebody, did you do this with AI, and they didn't? Boy, oh boy, that would open up a whole can of worms. Callum goes on to say, I'd imagine it would cause some reputational damage with taxi clients if AI-generated tracks with all their associated moral and legal issues slip through the net. That's going to be the case not just for taxi, but for the entire industry. I'm sure that there are probably libraries that have gotten stuff that I listen to a fair amount. I try to listen for at least a half hour a week to what's the latest, greatest AI music generating software. And Suno, I've heard some real crap. In one session with Suno, I got it with a prompt that I thought was good to create something that sounded so obviously robotic and created by AI that it was laughable. And another one that libraries would have signed would be my guess. Who knows where this is all going? But the one thing that gives me comfort, at least for the relatively near future, maybe midterm future, maybe forever future, is the legal issues of the networks not wanting to use music. It's not kosher. So you cannot copyright an AI-generated track. Has to have an author. Could you use AI to generate a beat and then build something on top of that beat where it's more human and less robot? I think that's kosher. I could be wrong, but I think I've asked a couple of music attorneys about that, and they said, no, that's kosher. So could you use it to generate ideas and then recreate the ideas and embellish? Absolutely. But who knows where it's all going to land? All I'm saying is the networks are not going to want... Think about this. Think about the big picture. Let's say that NBC, and I'm just pulling a network out of thin air. This is not really a story about it or an example of NBC. But let's say that NBC allows a lot of AI-generated music to end up in their productions. And it goes out and it airs. And then there is some legal issue that pops up a year later, 2 years later, 5 years later, whenever it pops up. Now they have all that music built into their shows. And they have to go back and replace it if they want the shows to rerun or play in other markets around the world. I can tell you that that's a big endeavor because it used to be that shows weren't so good with their licenses for music and that they would license the music for a broadcast, but they would forget to put in a clause in their license contract that says also applicable for DVD collections, let's say. So frequently they would go back to the publishers, the music libraries, the record labels, whomever, and say, okay, we're going to put out a DVD set for Christmas and we need you to give us license to include the same music that went out in the broadcast in the DVD version. And the libraries and record labels and whatever know that they've got them over a barrel right now. And they go, hold on a minute, Baba Louie. Now we're going to charge you more. Before you paid $1,000 sync fee. Now it's going to be double that because they know that they don't want to have to go back and then go through the entire process of slugging in, finding and putting in new music into those productions so that they have something that they can legally use in the DVD release. I only know this because several of those companies would come to Taxi and run listings to find replacement music because they made that mistake of not having broad enough coverage in their licensing contracts to include DVD releases or whatever. So there you go. I don't know that. I think it's going to be a while before. I don't care how good the music is. You can play this back for me 2 years from now or 5 years from now. Maybe we'll all laugh at me. But the music could be great. But if there are copyright issues because legislation has not caught up to technology. Do you remember Napster? I do. Great example of legislation never ever caught up to the technology, right? So therefore, the companies that use the music are not going to be so quick to want to use it and put it permanently in their shows. I think that that makes sense, right? Okay, here's one from Mel Strait. I've been involved in radio and TV for over 50 years. And a musician even longer than that. I have a pretty good understanding of music genres and formats. It's been my observation that the Taxi descriptions and examples do not always match. This is especially true when providing vocal examples. In other words, somebody's looking for hip-hop instrumentals for their library. The problem is, Mel, that they are reluctant to... we can't use an example from an existing music library because if we do, people will figure it out. And got to remember, there are a lot of people that see our listings that are not yet members, but they will then go sleuthing and figure out, oh, this example came from that library. And then they send stuff directly to that library, and a lot of it's probably not great, or maybe their business etiquette is lacking. And they cause friction with these companies. Where'd you hear about us? Through Taxi. So now Taxi gets the blame for something that we didn't do wrong. So yes, it's not a perfect world when we have to use a song, a hip hop song, and say they're looking for instrumental tracks like that. But look at the bigger picture. Maybe it's West Coast hip hop. So what's the instrumentation? Where's the range of the BPMs? there are signs, cues, hints that are in there. And remember, it's not about I need to make it just like that. It's about would my track fit on a playlist? If you took these three examples of hip hop with vocals, took the vocals out, and added back a little melody light, and then added my track as the fourth thing on the playlist, would my hip hop track sound like it was appropriately on that list with the other things? That's what it's about. It's about triangulation. It's not about sounding just like it. Because, and we try and have three examples that have commonality but don't sound exactly like the others. So there you go. Hello, Marion Laird. Good to see you. Any new thoughts or an update on AI? That's from Stein Reed. I think I covered that like two questions ago. Thank you for asking a question. Here's one from Michael Bruce Miller. Hey, Michael, how are you? I tried using Shazam with some of my tracks. It recognized 18 of 24 incorrectly and didn't recognize the rest. Are those who use this tool to determine if the track they are considering would possibly infringe a copyright listening to the suggestion from Shazam? If not, this seems like a very inaccurate tool for evaluating the provenance of an unknown track. Do you have any thoughts? Well, yes, I do. This is not an area of great expertise for me, but people will Shazam. Libraries do what's called due diligence. They hear something they like, they think that they've got clients that would like to use it, and then they start doing due diligence. They look at ASCAP or BMI or whatever the PRO is. They want to see if you, in fact, did show who all the writers are. One of the reasons that they Shazam is they want to see if there are any samples in there that a musician, a composer, a producer might have grabbed from a hit record and looped it and thrown it in there, and Shazam may show that. There are examples of, let's say, Beyonce. I'm going to pull her out of thin air. Let's say Beyonce, whoever produced a track for Beyonce, licensed or bought a beat from a beat licensing or sales place, a beat store, and they put it on that record, and somehow that same beat now makes it to your instrumental track and is standing there substantially in the clear, and you, the library, Shazams your thing, and it goes, hey, there's a Beyonce song, because it recognizes the beat from the Beyonce hit. So there are all these ways that Shazam does work. All that said, it's not perfect. I'm my wife doesn't love this about me, but I sit there and watch anything on TV, and I've got my phone sitting right next to me on the couch or on my leg or in my hand. And every time I hear a piece of music, not just that I like, but is interesting. Oh, that's an interesting choice. Why did the supervisor put that in that scene? Who is that? And I've discovered so many artists that I otherwise would have never heard of by Shazamming. But very often when I Shazam stuff and it comes up with no answer, you can pretty much bet your bottom dollar that that piece of music, as good as it was, came from a music library, and that Shazam doesn't have it in its catalog of references. So it's also a pretty good way to detect what has come from libraries and what has come from maybe smaller indie labels. Let's see, do I have anything else here? Oh, here's one from Robert Decasari. When you write a song for sync and you no longer have 100% of the publishing, can you use fragments of the same recording for other projects? And if so, to what extent? No. When they sign it, they sign the whole thing. It's kind of like you can't go into a restaurant. Maybe this isn't the greatest example, but it's an example. You go into a restaurant and you order a three-course meal, but you only eat the salad. Do you still have to pay for the other two courses? Yeah, you do. So I don't know if that's a great example, but no, you can't use pieces. Doesn't work. Okay, so I've gotten through all those, I think. Let's see. Yep. Thank you all for submitting those. Now I will be happy to take some from the folks in the chat room. It's funny, every day, about this time of day, the sun hits the blinds on the window. And I've got to close the window or the blinds because otherwise I get glare from cars in the parking lot outside. So it acts like a giant heat generating device over there. And when I'm doing the show, it's amazing. As soon as the air conditioning quits blowing, it reaches whatever temperature I've got it set to, all of a sudden I can literally feel the heat coming from over there. All right. Yes, please start with the word question in all caps. That makes it pop out a little bit more visibly in the chat room. Here's a question from Love Has Limits. Is it possible to have a Mo They stream showcasing top 10 forwards of the month? A Mo They stream? I don't know what you mean. This can help us learn the standard of various listings. Love Has Limits. We just did a show last week called Would You Forward This? And we don't do a, first of all, we post top tens, but they are not top tens of stuff that was necessarily forwarded. We have a top 10 on the website of stuff that the screeners hear and go, this is really cool. Let's give it some love and some exposure. So we put it on the website for 30 days along with nine others. But we just did a show last week, and we do them several times a year where we read the listing details and then we play music. Would you forward this or would you return this? So that you can hear the difference between forwarded and returned. People love those shows. They tell us that they really learn a lot because they can listen much more objectively to somebody else's music being critiqued than their own. So go back and check out, monthly. Ah, Mojo's translating for me. Mo They is monthly. Got it. Anyway, there's your answer. Go check out last week's show or any others where it's called something like You're in the A&R Hot Seat. Here's one from Alan Hall. If a submission is a little too close to one of the references, will the screeners return it with that is the reason? Context, my friend Ellen. If it's melodically, put it this way, if the instrumentation, let's use one of my favorite examples, the Rolling Stones song Miss You. So you create a song that is similar tempo, the bass sound is remarkably similar, the sound of the Telecaster guitar is identical, the attitude is identical, everything about it sounds like, wow. Is that the Rolling Stones? But it doesn't sound like the song. It is not melodically like it. The lyrics are not like it. The screener will probably forward it. There was a lawsuit years ago. Can't remember the band. I can't think of it. Anyway, they sued somebody. I can't remember if it was successful or not, but they sued somebody for being too close to their sound. People in the industry don't like using the word sound alike anymore. And you'll see that a lot of the legalese that we put into our listings is to discourage people from trying to sound alike. But you know what? If you're a clothing manufacturer and you're the designer for the clothing manufacturer and you're walking down the street with the CEO of the clothing company, and you're walking through Midtown Manhattan at lunch hour, and you see that a surprising number of ladies are wearing poodle skirts. Remember those pink and gray poodle skirts from the 1950s or 60s. They were made of felt, I think, and they had like a big poodle drawn on them and maybe even some sequins. I can't believe I remember that, but I do. So if that CEO of the other clothing company and his designer person are walking around Manhattan and they know poodle skirts are very much in fashion, or it could be men's Bermuda shorts in a plaid, like Madras plaid, they can go come up with their own poodle skirt design or their own plaid shorts, you know? Of course, everybody imitates whatever is happening now. You just can't rip it off. I think the legal test is there a substantial reason, a substantial level of confusion? If you hear one, could you easily think it's the other? Just because it's got the same bass sound, bass guitar sound, drum sound, and even attitude, I don't know that qualifies it as wading into dangerous territory. Zen Chief Engineer, how are you and the fam? We're doing fine, thank you. Let me go back up because I'm sure I missed some. How do Apple loops figure into the screening? Honestly, I don't know. The screeners can't know every loop that's in every loop library in the world. And I don't know what the terms and conditions are, the legalese that's associated with the Apple loops. So I couldn't give you a good answer on that one. I'm sorry. Why not get solar film applied to your window? You know, Bruce, I would love to, but then the windows on the outside of the building would look different from building to building, suite to suite. So I've asked in the past and they have discouraged it. Maybe I should just put it up, but then again, I could spend $500 putting reflective film on the windows and they come and tell me to take it down. But thanks for the suggestion. Here's a question from Justin Wilder. Do country clients ever accept voice memos or light demos, or are they looking for produced out tracks? I mean, unless you're a hit country writer with a stellar reputation and a string of hits, I would never send anything from a voice memo. I don't even think anybody in Nashville would go that far, unless the songwriters had a 20-year relationship with the artist and they happen to bump into him and go, come on out to the parking lot. I want to play you something I sang into my phone the other day. Maybe that's an exception. But if you read the country listings, many of them will say they will accept a guitar vocal or piano vocal demo. The key to that is having a vocal delivery that just absolutely would make any artist who does that style hear that demo and go, I can totally hear myself doing that, because the vocal performance is so good. And I'm not talking about technically good, or they singing operatically, or like, you know, Whitney Houston or Mariah Carey. No, they're singing in a way that conveys the emotion and the message of the song so effectively that if a big country artist that publisher is going to present that to hears it, they would be compelled to want to cut it. So yes, there have been country songs that have been cut as a result of a guitar vocal demo. There's one that I played at the Road Rally last year. I can't play it here because of copyright issues. It's the best piano vocal demo I've heard in almost 50 years of being in the industry. It's that good. And when I played it at the Road Rally for the next like 2 days, people came up to me going, where can I get that? Where can I hear it again? You're right. That was amazing. It was a song that got written by two writers in Nashville immediately. Oh, gosh. If anybody remembers, it's a song that ended up being a hit for the band that cut it, and they cut it almost instantly. So yeah, piano vocals or guitar vocals can work. They just have to be really good on their own. Whoa, I just jumped ahead by about 3 feet. No, it's not okay to use a free beat off YouTube as long as you give the artist credit and I'm not getting paid from it. Definitely not for film and television. No. Nope. Can you submit cover songs that you've recorded to Taxi Listings? If they're asking for cover songs, yes. Otherwise, no, they're looking for original music. Question: are the screeners all professionals in the particular genre they are reviewing? Yes. And it should be known that we turn away a lot more screeners than we hire. Because not only do they have to be expert in their particular genre or genres, usually they don't do more than a couple of genres, because people would say, I'm really good at like seven genres, probably aren't. Very few exceptions to that. But I will say that you're going to be impressed when I tell you this. Country music for film and TV is different than country music for records in Nashville. The reason is country radio, country record labels, country prefers having what they call a lot of furniture in the room or a lot of visual detail. I walked into the smoky bar. I could hear the peanut shells on the floor being crushed under my boots. I saw her sparkling blue eyes and her flaxen blonde hair from across the smoke-filled room, blah, 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 right? That's country for records and radio. If you had all that in a country song for film and TV, and what if that song takes place at a Sunday morning brunch place? Doesn't have smoke in the air, it doesn't have peanut shells on the floor. The girl that you spot across the room has brown hair and brown eyes. The more details you put in, the less likely it is to get used because those details won't line up with what's on the screen, right? So we have screeners that do country only for radio and records, and they are in Nashville, and they're all heavy-duty industry pros. And then we have screeners, mostly here in LA, but some outside of LA that work remotely, and they do country for film and TV. They don't need to be experts on country music for radio and records. They're not picking hits. They're picking country music that doesn't have so many details or doesn't have a lot of furniture in the room that won't get in the way of the dialogue or the story or what's happening on the screen. So they're expert on what works in film and TV, and yes, it's a country song. It's a pretty good one. So it works for this request. So that just shows you how much effort we put into making sure that you guys get paired up with the right screeners. And now it's officially freezing in here. Okay. Scrolling down. Can you submit cover songs? Did that one already? Did that one already? What DAW would I recommend? Everybody's got personal preferences. I've got Logic Pro, but I just dabble with it. I'm a retired engineer that's used to working with 2-inch analog tape and SSL consoles. So I've got Logic Pro on my laptop and I love playing with it. I just don't have the time to sit down and become really proficient with it. People love Logic. It's got a lot of really useful tools built in. Frankly, a lot of the plugins that come standard with Logic, I find to be really, really, really good. So there's that. There are other people that are diehard Pro Tools users, and everybody's got a preference. It's probably what they learned on. There are certain genres that, certain DAWs that work better for like dance music. FL Studio seems to be one that works for that versus Logic or Pro Tools, but. I'm the wrong person to ask. Ask it on the Taxi forum at forums with an S dot taxi.com, and do a poll on the forum and find out from the people that use them every day. And we'll give you a lot better information than I will. Is there some kind of program to help organize possible sync songs by BPM key, blah, 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 blah? Yes, absolutely. It is called Composer Catalog, composercatalog.com. And it does much more than what you're asking for. It was created by one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, a Taxi member named Keith LeBrant. Many of his fellow members have purchased it over the years. It's like, I don't know, $49 or something. Pretty cheap thrill, really good. He keeps refining it. People love it. Composercatalog.com. Scrolling down. Oh, we're at 5:30 already. Wow. Bruce Capaferri, one last question here. There's a current Motown request, and I have one, but the bridge is rhythmically spoken. Could that work? I think so. Again, without hearing it, I don't know. Can you afford $5 to find out? I hate to spend your money for you, but if the track or the song is really, really good and that spoken section is really good, maybe. Mary Malone, you can go watch this later on YouTube. It will be archived at the Taxi Independent A&R YouTube channel. All right. That wraps up today's show, ladies and gentlemen. What would you rather have me do for next week's show? You have no idea how cold it is in here right now. I was thinking about doing a show next week called How Much Can You Earn as a Part-Time Composer? And sending out an email, doing a query with, like, I don't know, 50 to 100 Taxi members that I know, are making money and doing it part-time because they have a full-time job. And without identifying who they are, because I wouldn't want to tie their specific income. It's obviously private information. Anyway, doing a show, it's like, wow, look at that. There, here's a bunch of people that have a 40-hour a week job and a family, and they participate in a church group and go to their kids, soccer matches, blah, 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 all that stuff. And yet they made $27,000 last year, and they've been working at this for 8 years. Just to give people some perspective on what can be accomplished. So that's a possibility for next week's show. I was also thinking about seeing if my dear friend Rob Shirelli, who I've been talking to a lot lately, can join me. We haven't had Rob on a show in God knows how long. Rob Shirelli's got five or six Grammys now. He's worked with Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, Madonna. Just big, 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 big artist as a mixer, as a producer. And he's always, people love it when I have Rob on the show. We're very close friends and we have chemistry, as they say. So, would you guys rather have ask Rob anything about mixing? Like, up to five Grammys and over 100 gold and platinum records that he doesn't even bother to hang up on a wall. So, you could ask him. Mixing questions, or we could do the how much money can you make as a part-time composer? Everybody that likes the how much money can you make, hit a dollar sign. Let's see that in the queue, in the chat. So dollar signs for your voting mechanism here. Oh, there they go. Tim Harrison writes dollar sign. Oh, you guys. All right, so a decent number of people. All right, And now, for those of you who would like Rob, Pedro's still have a hard time talking to Rob, too awestruck. That's funny. Those of you who would like Rob, type in the letter R. Ooh, look at that. MMS was on top of the game and guessed that I was going to ask for the letter R. I gotta say, the R's are coming in more quickly, and it looks to be about a tie. All right, let me check and see if Rob is available. He works a lot. And whoa, I would say Rob wins. All right, I'll talk to Rob in the next 24 to 48 hours and see if he's available to join me for the show next week. If not, we'll do the how much money can you make in your spare time a week from today and do Rob the week after. Thank you guys so much for joining me today. I hope I gave out some valuable information and got all my answers correct. I won't know until I go back and look at the chat, see people go, no, you got that so wrong. Thank you. See you next week for another. Oh, if you haven't given us a thumbs up, please do. We really appreciate it. And if you're not a subscriber to the channel, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. And hit the little notification bell so that you know when we're going live with shows. All right. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.